In just a bit, we'll hear how some merry old English holiday traditions are being revived. And we'll check in on the celebrations you'll find for Christmas in the Tyrol of the Austrian Alps, in Italy's Cinque Terre, and in a few unconventional places. First, let's see how they get into the holiday spirit in Venice with tour guide Elena Zamperone. Elena, benvenuti.
Thank you to you, Eric.
Growing up in Venice, what are some fun memories you have as a child of Christmas?
Unwrapping gifts with my parents at home, with my grandmothers, and saying, wow, Santa Claus remember me this year. Or just walking down the streets, going to the Christmas Mass together at midnight. That was a Mass in my family.
So now you live in what part of Venice?
Canareggio, the northern part from the Grand Canal.
Okay, so a little bit away from all the tourist center?
Yeah, just a little bit away.
Would you go to St. Mark's Basilica on a big day like that, or you'd go to your neighborhood church?
My neighborhood church.
Wow.
We belong to each church.
And which church would that be?
Madonna dell'Orto.
Madonna dell'Orto.
Yeah.
Everybody goes to church on Christmas Eve, I suppose.
Usually.
I mean, if you're going to go to church once in the year, it would be Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it will be on Christmas.
Okay. Now, how does the canal world of Venice shape the way Venetians celebrate Christmas? Is there anything unusually Venetian about Christmas?
Yeah, we have a regatta, a Christmas regatta through the Grand Canal.
So that's like a parade for boats?
A parade for boats. And everybody has to, if you want to participate, you got to dress up like Santa Claus.
So Santa Claus on a gondola.
See, si. They're from Venetian boats.
Are there many boats?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them, yeah.
Christmas regatta. Is that on what day?
Usually it's on the Sunday before Christmas.
Okay.
So it starts by the Basin of San Marco, and then it goes through the whole Grand Canal, and it ends up in Rialto.
And everybody dresses up as?
Santa Claus.
Santa Claus.
Of course, many Santa Claus.
There's a lot of Santa Clauses.
Santa Claus.
And what kind of boats are there?
Different Venetian boats, Sandalo, Caorlina, rowed by six, rowed by two, rowed by one. So
you know these different boats?
Oh, yeah.
So tell me again,
Sandalo is just row by one or by two, Caorlina by six mostly, and that's a very thick and big one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You can row singing Christmas songs, and then in Rialto, it's time for just drinking wine or hot chocolate.
Rialto is the area because there's lots of restaurants and bars and so
on. Yes, and right under the fish market, right under the wide open arches, just because on Sunday there's no market. We can eat and we can chit-chat, and a lot of kids come to see many Santa Claus.
Do you feel on these festivals around Christmas time in Venice that it's the world is of the local Venetian people, or do you feel invaded by the tourists?
No, no tourists at all. Huh. I think that tourists don't come for Christmas. Maybe they used to choose some other spots in Italy, but not Venice. Maybe because it's all the way up to the north, too cold to...
Because it can be cold.
Can be cold.
I've stood on the top of St. Mark's, and I've seen the Alps. You can see them. They cut into the sky.
When it's not humid and the air is clear, it's a very few times a year.
But you see the mountain, because it must be a few times a year, because I've been on top of the bell tower many times, and you don't notice the Alps.
No.
But in the winter, the air can be crispy.
It's fantastic. Sometimes it's lovely.
But
other times in Christmas, we have high tide.
Yeah.
It happens. Yeah.
Oh, okay, so all those Santa Clauses are pulling on their boots.
Sometimes. we gotta wear our rubber boots.
Do you have rubber boots in your house?
Of course.
Of course,
two pairs.
How high are they?
Till knees and then over knees.
You've got one that goes higher than your knees?
Yeah, of course.
Rubber boots.
See, if I gotta go to the Semra Square, I need the big boots.
And how many times a year do you use those boots?
Thousands. A lot.
A lot.
More than hundreds.
So there's a lot of flooding in Venice these days.
Yes.
What are they doing about that?
Praying. Using rosaries.
Good luck.
No, I mean, you got to slow down. You slow down and everybody slow down. You enjoyed it.
So it's a sort of a blessing because now we can't do what we planned and now we can have more time together or something.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like when we have snow here. It makes everybody slow down.
Yeah.
So when you have a flood.
The only thing is if you got to catch a train, you are in trouble.
Then you got to get on your boots early.
Yeah.
Now, all over Italy, they're famous for the Presepe. These beautiful manger scenes. I think St. Francis sort of invented the idea of the manger scene to illustrate the Christmas story in Assisi. And then I know all over Italy, you go into the churches and it's like a local competition to have the most beautiful manger scene or presepe. Do you have that tradition in Venice?
Very small and little presepes in some churches, but
not in Rome.
No, not like in Rome. We don't have a proper tradition.
And then in Rome, I know the Christmas season goes all the way until Epiphany, January 6th. when they have a La Befana. It's like the holiday witch.
A beautiful woman.
Do you have the La Befana in Venice?
We have it too, yeah.
So explain to what is the whole meaning? Because it's confusing to me. Who is this La Befana and why on Epiphany and what happens?
Usually she brings candies and cold to people.
Cool. So yeah, candy also, if the kids are good and cold if they're back. But it happens on the 12th day of Christmas. Epiphany.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's when the kids are going to get their, what, do they have a stocking and it's filled with little goodies?
Yeah, it happens the day before they're back to school. So that's why they got to be good.
They got to be, oh, it's planned that way.
Of course.
Very smart, mother and father in Italy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the end of Christmas, even in Venice. But the beginning in Venice, I think, is up to two different parties. So there are some families who used to decorate their Christmas tree after La Madonna della Salute celebration.
Oh, La Madonna della Salute, that's the big church that was built to celebrate surviving the plague,
I think. In the middle of the 1600s.
The big famous Baroque church across, we always see it from St. Mark's. And I understand you build a special bridge across the Grand Canal.
By wooden raft.
Right? Still happens.
Temporary. Yeah, it still happens. There's a sort of parade of people holding their candles to light up the candles into the church for asking for a good health for their whole family.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and that always happens on November the 21st.
And that kicks off the Christmas season.
For some families.
For some families.
Some mothers, like mine, on December the 8th for the Immaculate Conception.
Okay.
I've always done it.
So your mother has a shorter Christmas season.
Yeah, yeah.
Because for us, you don't decorate for Christmas until after Thanksgiving.
Of course.
So this would be about the same time.
Yeah.
So if you think back, Elena, to your childhood, tell me your most beautiful little Christmas memory as a child celebrating Christmas in Venice.
So in my family, we used to wait for Santa Claus on Christmas Eve.
Uh-huh.
So at a certain time after dinner, my father, the boss of the family, had to say, okay, now let's go to the other side of the house. Let's turn the light off, waiting for Santa Claus. But one year it happened and my grandmother was just sleeping with us because she was ill. So we left grandma in that room, in the living room, and we left that room. So a couple of minutes later, my father said, okay, now I gotta go back and I gotta catch if Santa Claus went or not. And then at a certain time, we heard boom, a very heard boom. So we back and my grandma was down on the floor. So apparently she fell down by herself. But I think I was four. I thought it was Santa Claus who punched my grandma.
kicked my grandma
and said, oh, Santa Claus is not that good for me this year.
So was your grandmother okay?
Yeah, of course.
And did Santa Claus come?
See.
And everything was happily ever after.
Yes. So
that's good. By the way, were you, when La Befana comes on January 6th, did you get goodies or did you get coal?
No, always candies and goodies.
Always candies?
Yeah, I was a good girl.
You were
girl.
A good little girl.
Of course.
And what kind of candies and goodies would La Befana
like
bring?
Like sweets and like chocolate bars.
Happy times.
Yeah, happy times.
Happy
only.
Times.
One time I had just cola, but it was a sugar cola.
Oh, that was good. So it was
just for a nice girl.
Cool for a nice girl.
Yeah.
Elena Zemperan, how do you say Merry Christmas in Venetian?
Buon Natale.
Buon Natale. Mille grazie.
Grazie, Tarik.
Lorraine Deneen joins us now for a look at some of the holiday preparations you can find throughout England that get you ready for Christmas. She's a licensed tour guide based in Bath. Lorraine, happy holidays, and thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So if you think back on your childhood memories of Christmas in England, there's something called a stirrup Sunday. What is that?
Yeah, it's the last Sunday before Advent,
mm-hmm.
which is most likely to be the last Sunday in November.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when the Christmas puddings are made. Christmas puddings are a mixture of dried fruits and breadcrumbs and eggs. You mix it all together and you put it in a basin and then you steam it for hours and hours, and you eat it after you've eaten your turkey on Christmas Day.
Okay.
You actually set fire to it, which is a bit silly. But on stir-up Sunday, you get the family and you get the kids round just to give it a stir. And traditionally, you put a little piece of silver in there, so like a sixpence or something would have gone in there.
Uh-huh.
And then whoever gets the sixpence on Christmas Day in their pudding dish is the lucky one.
So there's a coin in the pudding.
I know.
Did you ever get that as a child?
Yes.
It must have made you just filled with joy.
Well, yeah, because sixpence was worth a lot when I was a kid. We don't have sixpences anymore.
What could you buy with a sixpence?
Sweets.
Back then, they sold candy, like little separate candies, right? So you just buy them.
Yes.
You'd weigh them out.
Yeah, you'd weigh them out. Six penny worth of sweeties. So that's a Christmas tradition. And on Christmas Day, when you've steamed the pudding for hours and hours and hours, and you get it out the dish and it sits there, you pour whiskey over it or brandy over it and you set fire to it. I don't know why you do that. And you eat it with cream or custard or whatever, brandy sauce.
Is that still popular?
We still set fire to our puddings, yeah.
What about wassailing? Is that
wassailing? Yeah,
wassailing.
That's another tradition that's had a bit of a revival recently. It's traditionally found in areas where they grow cider apples.
Mm-hmm.
Gloucestershire, Herefordshire, Somerset.
Yeah. Cider, very hard cider.
Yes.
Scrumpy.
Yes. Well, it was tradition to get the village together to go and bless the orchard, and the village would march down to the orchard, banging drums and making a lot of noise to get rid of the evil spirits. Then they'd pour a little cider around all the trees.
Into the roots, right down at the bottom of the tree.
Just to make sure that the trees produced enough apples to make good cider again the following year. And they'd sing a lot of songs as well. And it's a tradition that has been revived quite recently. And you can imagine any excuse to get down the orchard and drink a lot and make a lot of noise.
There's a guy named Roy who has a cider farm, an orchard up in near Cheddar Gorge.
Yes.
Roy Wilkins.
Yes.
Land's End Farm, I think.
Uh-huh.
And when you go there, it's like, it feels like a club that's been partying for 6 months.
Yeah.
They're just there. They're draped over all the trees. They're hanging out in the driveway. And there's got these big kegs of cider. And it is a wild scene.
Yeah, I bet they do wassailing down there as well.
That would be fun,
yeah.
Wassailing. So singing, drinking cider, a tradition going way, way back.
It's a pagan ritual, basically.
Before Christianity came to England.
Yeah, it's a pagan ritual.
And still carried on.
Yeah.
Wherever there's fruit trees.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
What would people sing during wassailing?
So it's your wassail and it's my wassail and a toast to everybody. It's a jolly wassail.
So it's a wassail. That's what you do. You're going to wassail together.
You wassail down to the orchard and you make a lot of noise.
It sounds almost like a movie scene with a bunch of people traipsing from the village square out to the orchard, singing together.
It's a bit weird, really, isn't it, when you think about it like that?
Probably holding torches.
Well, yes. Yeah, they would be, wouldn't they?
In the dead of winter.
Yeah, exactly. Dead of winter. So it gives everybody an excuse to get together and have a party.
Otherwise, it's pretty dreary.
Very dreary.
And back then, you didn't even know for sure if spring was going to come. You thought maybe this is the end of stuff.
Well, it was their way of ensuring that the trees were going to produce apples again that year. They got every base covered.
That's true. And they sold a little cider.
Oh, I tell you what is interesting.
Yeah.
Some of our Christmas carols have come from wassailing songs. So things like, now bring us some figgy pudding, now bring us some figgy pudding, now bring us some figgy pudding and bring it right here. What's that got to do with Christianity? It hasn't. It's got a lot to do with wassailing, though.
Which is a pagan tradition that was incorporated into the Christian traditions over the centuries.
Yes.
So bring us some figgy pudding. And we were just talking about figgy pudding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And if you're lucky, you'll find a little silver coin in that, and then everything's going to be good this next year.
Yes.
All right. Lorraine Dineen, thanks so much for taking us back to the old country as we better understand Christmas in England.
It's fun, isn't it?
It sure is. Lorraine, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Merry Christmas. Because Tony Wheeler's dad worked in the airline industry, he grew up in a number of countries besides his native England. When he moved to Australia back in the 1970s, Tony's Notes for Backpackers eventually became the Lonely Planet Publishing Company. Tony first joined us a few years back on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us about the Christmas season in the Southern Hemisphere. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Think back on some Christmases you've had overseas. What sort of cultural highlights and surprises have you enjoyed?
Funnily enough, I keep thinking of seafood when I think of Christmas. You know, certainly in England, turkey, which I was born in England, turkey is the Christmas meal, much like it's turkey for Thanksgiving in the States. But in Australia, we for many years, we've had a seafood barbecue in the back garden and had a lot of friends around. And it's outside on the Christmas Eve. And we're
eating... it's the shrimps on the Barbie thing.
Shrimps on the Barbie and lobster and oysters. And
But Christmas is hot in Australia, right?
It's hot, so you're outside.
Elementary, you know, so, there you go.
Yeah.
So Santa Claus has short pants.
Sure, Santa Claus certainly does have short pants. And late night on Christmas Eve is what I really think of being the, and my kids would as well, that's what they'd really associate Christmas with. They'd associate with Christmas Eve outside and seafood. But also one of the best Christmases I ever had traveling was in Burma. This was a long time ago when there were very few tourists in Burma, and the Raffles Hotel, which is the big fancy hotel, but very, very run down in those days. And we went to have dinner there the Christmas Day, and we thought, how can we sort of try and do a Christmas dinner? And the only thing we could think of was lobster. It was sort of the nearest thing you could think of to a fancy Christmas meal. It was fun.
Let's talk a practical travel tip here. You've got guidebooks that are covering the entire world. People often ask me, what should I do at Christmas? You know, I'm in this or that place, and I usually don't know because I've never been there on Christmas. Just in general, if somebody's exploring the world, what's a good practical tip to enjoy Christmas away from home?
I guess, you know, if you want to make something of it, this should be the day of the week that you have a fancy meal, that you do something that feels a little bit out of the way, a little bit Christmas-like. But it's remarkable how you can find little reminders of Christmas in the strangest places. I remember once I was in Kathmandu at Christmas, and we went into a shop and we were looking around, and they had little figures of the various Hindu gods. You could have a Vishnu or a Shiva or a Ganesh or whatever. And we looked at them and we thought, they look like something you'd hang on a Christmas tree. And we sort of said this, and an assistant in the shop said, yes, you could hang them on a Christmas tree. So obviously somebody else had already suggested this, and this had become an idea. And for many years, our Christmas tree back at home did every year have a little figure of Ganesh and a little figure of Shiva and Vishnu hanging on the tree.
And when you bring that up, it reminds me, you know, Christendom is Christendom, and that's just a minority of the planet.
But Christmas is something different.
Christmas is different. Yeah, you have Christmas celebrated in Japan, and it's more like a party.
It is, yeah. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No.
I mean, I think it's taking a different perspective.
It's a multicultural approach to Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
In Japan, it's the big party. I know at New Year's is more of the religious time. And in Japan, everybody's got their Christmas cakes.
Yes, indeed.
And you're packed onto the subway.
And like then, you know, a month later in the Chinese part of the world, suddenly it's Chinese New Year is the celebration. I think we should, you know, enjoy every celebration we can take part in. They're all fun.
And when you travel in the developing world, or what we'd call the third world, a lot of times I think there is more festive kind of color. In Bali, don't they say there's a festival every day?
Just about, yeah. And the year is shorter. The year is only 210 days. So the annual celebrations come around more regularly.
So wherever you're traveling, you can be tuned in to the local festivities and embrace them with gusto.
Yeah. And, you know, it can be all sorts of local things. It can be the local sport. I think, you know, if you go to any country, find out what the local sport is and see if you can catch an archery contest in Bhutan, where archery is a national sport, or canoeing in Polynesia, where I've seen outrigger canoes go so fast you could water ski behind them.
That is a fundamental trick, is to get out of the museums and beyond the palaces and beyond the tour buses and actually become a temporary local person, whether it's going to a sporting event or getting into a home to celebrate a local holiday, if it happens to be Christmas or whatever, getting yourself intimate with the culture.
Yeah.
Tony Wheeler, thanks a lot. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Tony Wheeler and his wife Maureen live in Melbourne, where they founded the Wheeler Center to support writers, readers, and thinkers in Australia. Just ahead, we'll get another Southern Hemisphere report on the holidays. And we're calling on more friends in Europe to hear about their Christmas memories and traditions on Travel with Rick Steves.